the trans wars are only a subset of the culture wars that are raging all across America. And we are involved because it affects our very existence. But we should also be aware that we don't need to feel completely alone, because the number of categories that people are willing to go to the barricades for have become so extensive at this point that we really are a country that really needs some healing. And I don't know quite how to make that happen, but that would make an excellent topic too. I think that we're good people and that we contribute a lot. And when people bond with us and see us, it makes it much more difficult to hate us or ask that we simply disappear.
Great. Thank you. Have a good night.
Bedroom surprise.
Tune in into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, on K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and streaming on web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting...
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that, too. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
Hi, I'm B.B. King. You know the guy that plays that guitar called Lucille. And when I'm in Portland, I get my blues from KBOO. That's 90.7 FM on your radio. Please stay tuned. They might play one of my records.
To listen to the extended version of this episode, support us on patreon.com/forthewild. Hello and welcome to For the Wild podcast. I'm Ayanna Young. Today we are speaking with Trisha Hersey.
What I do is I lean on the past. I lean on my ancestors. Like, I talk about that in the book so much. I lean on the ideas of what they were doing and how they were able to be in the system, but not of it. How they were able to still find joy and pleasure and have family and still come up with inventive plans to escape.
Trisha Hersey is a Chicago native with over 20 years of experience as a multidisciplinary artist, writer, theologian, and community organizer. She is the founder of the NAP Ministry, an organization that examines rest as a form of resistance and reparations by curating spaces for the community to rest via community rest activations, immersive workshops, performance art installations, and social media. Her research interests include Black liberation theology, womanism, somatics, and cultural trauma. She is the author of the upcoming book, Rest is Resistance, a Manifesto. which will be published in October 11 of 2022. You can learn more about her work and pre-order the book at thenapministry.com. We were kind of just in a really good riff about where we're at in the world, what's happened since the pandemic. And it's interesting because our first interview was originally released in June 2020. And holy moly, the world has witnessed a deluge of resignations and general burnouts within jobs, within life. And yet it does not seem that we have come close to reckoning with this reality. And instead of actually taking a break, many people have been forced into new forms of exhaustion and exploitation as the companies that continue to exploit just have gotten richer and richer, kind of unbelievably richer. Yes. So your new book comes really at a vital time for us here, because I do still think that we can turn the tides. So I'd love to just, you know, start with hearing a bit about your book, what motivated you to write this right now, and what you hope the world might gain from it.
That's such a good question. It's a deep question, because I've been thinking about that. I thought about that from the moment I knew that I would be writing a book. I knew I didn't want it to be, maybe I can talk about what it isn't. I didn't want it to be some quick fix tip advice guide that you pick up and think you're going to be done. I knew I wanted it to be a manifesto, because I love manifestos. I love the history of a manifesto. I've studied them since I was younger. I love history and archives. And I really knew that I wanted this piece, this book, to really be an attempt to bring a new reality to into existence. And I wanted it to challenge and provoke. I wanted the form to feel like an incantation over people's heads, over their bodies as they read it. I wanted it to be a field guide and a collaborator on this lifelong pilgrimage we're going to be on, to be able to start unraveling ourselves from the grips of grind culture and white supremacy. It had to be something that asks the question, what do you believe? What can you imagine? What can be? Like, so I knew I wanted it, the form, to be something that felt like me, you know, felt like my background as a growing up as the daughter of a Black preacher, a Black Pentecostal militant preacher. Wanted someone who has studied homiletics, you know, the science of creating a sermon, and who's a poet. So it's poetry in there. It's full of stories about my family. It has a little bit of memoir. It's really trance work. I will uplift it as feeling like trance work, because there is a lot of repetition. I've always named the work of the Nat Ministry as being a deprogramming tool. Like, the reason we exist is to be a tool to begin to help you to deprogram from the brainwashing that grind culture has given to us since birth. So I've been naming it as a brainwashing since the beginning of this whole work. And so I knew I wanted it to be something that could counteract with that, that could be a counter narrative to the brainwashing that we have been under our entire lives, the brainwashing of social media. I wanted it to feel like something that could begin to work in the underground, work and come at people from a different way. So I want people to lay down while they're reading it and to feel that it is something that is demanding the impossible. And so any manifesto worth reading demands the impossible. And I just wanted it to be like this on the ground field guide. Like, so while we're all on the ground in our trying to like dismantle and come against these systems, like, it can be something that is a support, something you can stuff in your bag or have under your pillow, something that you can open up and it be a guide to help you as we all begin to like go in deep around the idea of resting, saving our lives, of resting being a resistance to all the systems that want us working all the time.
That was a really beautiful explanation. I really saw the book. And maybe I want to go into the numbness a bit, And really explore what rest is and what rest isn't, because I think people are even confused about that. And I think actually this design, this strategic design to keep us weak, and it also wants to keep us unmotivated towards that wholeness. And, you know, you work so hard that you can't take care of yourself or your community or the earth. And I guess also I'm thinking about this word lazy, which I've heard you speak about. Well, I guess I'm interested in how laziness and work are a part of the capitalist design. And within this, how is the rest you offer different from what we're told we earn through capitalism, like sitting and scrolling through Instagram or Netflix? Because there is this, I think there's this idea of, oh, you're so exhausted, you're going to get home, and you know what? You're just going to put on the internet or the TV, and finally you get to, quote, rest or lay, you know. But I'm like, is that rest? And when you look at our ancestors, they were very strong people. And I am concerned about the way we are offered rest, which I don't actually think is the regenerative rest that you're speaking about.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's another reason. I'm going to keep going back to the book. When you talk about why I wrote the book, one of the main reasons why I wrote the book is so that I could dispel some of the stuff that people were thinking, because I will be on IG. You know, social media is this beautiful technology. Most people think it is. They think it's this beautiful, I don't believe it. They think it's this beautiful technology that brings us together and connects us. And while it does have the opportunity to do that, and we've been able to remix it and be inventive around using it to connect with people all over the world, that's not why it was created. It was created simply to keep you scrolling, buying, consuming, and online distracted. That's really what it was for. It's another extension of capitalism. And so I wanted to take away the idea of what people were consuming online about rest. They would be like, oh, the net ministry, this is about resting. I'm going to lay down. Or this is about resting so that I can be more productive to do more for the system. I can do more at work. If I rest today, I'll do. And I was like, so much many things, because of the way social media is created, it doesn't allow for deep, nuanced conversation. And so this book needed to be a part of the literary canon. It needed to be a part of the world, so that people can have something that they can hold on to be able to get the facts, to be able to start to begin to read a sentence and be like, oh my goodness, that's what she meant by that. You know, I really wanted to help people to deepen and slow down and to really get offline. So I'm so glad this book is written so that people can put down their phones and sit and lay down and turn the page and read chapters where I'm like, this is what rest is. This is what rest isn't. So I'm very particular about that. There's a whole section where I talk about what rest is and what it isn't. And rest is not what any of us think it is. Because remember, we've all been trained and taught under the curriculum of white supremacy and capitalism, grind culture. Grind culture has taught us everything that we know about what resting is, about our labor, about what our bodies are, about who we are. And so because of that, we can't trust that. We can't trust the information. We can't trust the professor of capitalism, the person's teaching the class on the white, on that curriculum can no longer be trusted. And we have to not be keep spewing its ideals. We have to totally ignore it, totally dismantle from it and deprogram from it and begin to slowly bring ourselves to what's really true. We've been bamboozled most of our lives understanding what it is. So people don't know what rest is. They think productivity is something that it's not. And so to me, resting is anything that slows you down enough so that your mind and body can connect. So we start thinking about the somatics of our body and our mind. When you think about what it means to be exhausted, to be sleep deprived, when we look at the neurology of what's happening in our brains when we're sleep deprived, we're not moving and thinking and connected in a way that's at the full potential of what our brains can do. Our brains are being, in a lot of ways, traumatized by our sleep deprivation. And because of that, our bodies are also deeply traumatized by it. But then also spiritually, we're disconnected from the divine dwelling place that we have. Our bodies are an antenna for the creator, for divine ideas, for knowledge. Our bodies hold so much information for us. They are the teachers. And so when we aren't connected to them, when we aren't slowed down enough to begin to slowly do the connecting process our brains and body needs to kind of catch up with each other, to support each other, to soothe each other and hold each other up, we continue to be zombies and numbed out. And so when I think about resting, I think about anything that can slow you down. It can be, you know, not returning a phone call immediately, listening to music, dancing, walking, you know, crocheting, meditation. I mean, it's infinite. So I could be on this thing for 4 hours just with a list. It's infinite. But when we can begin to listen to our bodies, to say, what does my body want? Why do I keep ignoring my body? My body wants rest. My body wants to slow down. My body wants to wander. It wants to linger. And instead I say, no, you can't have that. I'm going to push through. I'm going to burn a midnight oil. I'll sleep when I'm dead. That feels lazy if I do that. And so this idea of laziness, I do not use the word laziness. I don't use the word lazy at all. I believe that any person, specifically, I want to talk about Black people. Black people use the word lazy so much. And I'm like, you know that that's what, you know, our ancestors were hearing while they were on plantations working 20 hours a day. So you don't come from a legacy of laziness. You don't come from a legacy of not working. I mean, you should not be calling yourself lazy, because that's simply language that the oppressor has taught you. Language of the oppressor. It goes back to our deprogramming and decolonizing from all the lies we've been told. And so this idea of laziness, I think, I wish it could be like totally eradicated from our vocabulary, from our imagination. Like, there's no such thing as lazy in a capitalist world. Who could be lazy here when the world goes on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, pushing output, pushing production, pushing this tool for us to continue to make the empire richer, to make the empire more wealthy. And so there is no room, there is no one who is lazy in a capitalist system. There is no human body that I believe that is also lazy. And so I reject the word lazy, and I want people to begin to place that word in the system that they live in. And so a lot of people don't realize that they're living in a system that doesn't even see them as a human being, that you're aligning with a system that merely sees you as nothing but a tool in a machine. And so that grief, the grief of that, of knowing that that's what someone feels about you, the manipulation of knowing that that's what you've been born into, we can't go on without resting. We're not going to be able to make it without resting. We're not going to be able to make it without connecting with our bodies and with the earth and with each other. We simply aren't. It's just like not possible. And so I feel like I keep hollering from a bullhorn, like, we're not going to make it if we don't stop. And sometimes I feel like, can people hear me? Who's hearing me? You know, who's this message touching? Who is it for? Who's available to grab it? Because we're in such a crisis that sometimes it feels like, what can I believe? You know, what can be really sweeping change for us to be able to move past this? And I believe and know that resting will be one of the many tools that we use.
I'm thinking back to one of our unrecorded conversations, and mm-hmm. I know that we both have a lot of concern for folks to even get to a place where they can make the decision to say, yes, I'm going to commit to this meticulous practice, and it's going to be long-term, because so many of us have been really wrapped up in the programming, in the duping. And so we're busy and we're burnt out and we're numb and we're not even reading emails and we're not even focusing anymore because it's the programming, and also the addiction to capitalism has been so reinforced. Like you were mentioning earlier in this conversation about how challenging it is for people to even believe that they are worthy, or, you know, because I think capitalism has become so quick and witty and look really intelligent on working off our psychology. So we may say, oh, we want to break away. And then something says, but you want to buy this. And so right. Well, then, you know what? We do want to buy that. We buy that. And I'm like, okay, now we're fulfilled. But you're not. And so there's like, the capitalism really, really understands our psychology.
Yes.
There's entire theories on disaster capitalism where capitalism will come in when we're at our lowest, like a substance, and take us and really, really enmesh us in our addiction and what we think of is our need to keep within the system, to keep working, to keep grinding. And so, you know, I'm going back to this place of like, okay, we're talking to each other when we haven't yet committed for so many reasons to this meticulous love practice. And it's obviously by design why it's hard for us to commit. And we could have hours where we're just discussing that. But it brings me to this quote that you wrote, and it says, quote, "The earth, the plants, the animals are who we should be collaborating with right now, because humans are not tapped in right now. Trust spirit."
That's hot off the presses. That's hot off the presses. That's what I'm feeling right now at this moment. Like, and when I say this moment, I mean like the season that we are in. You know, it's not thinking about time in a linear way, but it's like, yeah, I feel like we have to tap into spirit. And I think a really way to do that right now is to connect with the earth, is to connect with plant medicine, is to connect with animals and other spirit beings, and the sun and the sky and like our breathing. Like, we are not tapped in. We are so pulled away. Like, capitalism and white supremacy and grind, it has us so deeply wrapped up. I mean, it's, I feel like I've noticed it worse now that we are in this pandemic and we're almost 3 years in. Like, I've been tracking this. I've just been watching, like, people are more and more, this cognitive dissonance. People feel more numb. They feel very like exhausted. You can almost read it and feel it on people. Like, my son is 15 years old and we were talking about it. Someone was driving and they literally just were like driving so crazy and like almost hit us. And he was like, "I've noticed that people just seem disconnected." I was like, have you noticed that? He was like, "Yeah, I've noticed that since the pandemic, like how it feels like people are not here." And I'm understanding what a COVID mind and a COVID body, what's left behind after we're trying to like heal ourselves and stay alive, when there's this thing out here that could make you really sick and or disable or kill you. And so I'm like, what has that done to us mentally? What has that done to us spiritually that another person seems dangerous? You know, the idea of being around another person and them breathing on you at the beginning, it was dangerous. It was a dangerous thing to think of a body. A body is dangerous. It's spreading this, and we have to isolate. We're in quarantine. We're away from each other. I think there's been a moment of deep, deep collective trauma, and what that trauma has done to the brain. The studies tell us that trauma absolutely affects the brain. I mean, those have been done for years. And so I'm wondering what a COVID brain is like, what will be left behind, what's left after, what's the residue effects of us attempting to survive a global pandemic, of this happening across the board. We're still in the middle of it. You know, the pandemic is not over. People are still getting sick with it. And I'm wondering what it's going to look like 5 years, 10 years, when we begin to continue to see like the mental health crisis that comes up from this, and the deepening of our numbing, the deepening of capitalism, and how people are truly not tapped in. I always say that to people. Rest is a portal. Go there often. Go tap in, you know, tap into your body, tap into spirit, tap into your ancestors, tap into what you can't in any way, shape, or form tap into when you're in an awake state. Because your awake state is this numbed out, consumed state where you're just watching and seeing and scrolling and just consuming all day and night. But what would it feel like, and what could it be when you go into this dream space, when you can go and work things out in this other portal, in this third space? And I believe that resting is another dimension. It is a third space. It is a portal for us to go inside of, to invent, to imagine, to simply heal, to have space. And so I'm wanting more people to see slowing down and resting as the antidote, you know, always the antidote, but deeply now even the antidote to what has happened to these our pandemic bodies, our pandemic brains, and we all globally or collectively going through this immense anxiety and trauma and grief. We've lost so many people. When you think about the number of people who died from COVID, it's unimaginable that there are people walking around holding all of that. Like, I've lost my dad, I've lost my mom, my sister passed, or this. And they have all these this loss around them, and they're still just walking outside, putting on a mask, maybe, and then just going, you know, just hoping for the best. And so I don't know what will become of us. And I want rest to continue to be a guidepost. I know for sure that resting can save us. And I know for sure that I'm trusting on rest, and I'm trusting on my body over anything. I don't trust any of the systems to in any way care for me. And I'm leaning on community care and rest and our own inventive power, the subversive power that I've learned from my ancestors on how to be in a world, but not be of it. You know, we're in this world, but we don't have to be of it and be a part of it. We can find these like small ways to resist and be maroons and be outlaws against it.
To trust spirit and to trust our bodies. Mm-hmm. I think the compounding lies that we have been told, are being told, will be told is outrageous, and mm-hmm. it's exhausting in and of itself. Yes. Like, there's the exhaustion of the work, but then there's the exhaustion of navigating yes. the lies of our culture, not trusting our leaders, not mm-hmm. trusting global systems, not trusting that we'll be cared for, like you said. So that is a psychological exhaustion on top of the physical exhaustion. And then when do we have the space within that to have grace for ourselves, for each other, to take care of ourselves, for our community, to mm-hmm. Actually cook a meal? Like, mm-hmm. what are we left with when mm-hmm. we are just... So it is a violent attack. And I think with the pandemic, it's really, it feels wise in this moment to pause and say, you know what, actually the last 3 years have been really challenging psychologically for us. This anxiety and the stress of the beginning when we didn't know what was happening, to the lockdowns, to this, to the fear. I mean, there was so much. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, now airplanes you don't need to wear a mask. It's like, yeah. What has yeah. happened here? Like,
I know.
And I mean, that in and of itself, where there was so much pressure and anxiety and information and who do you trust and who this, and then all of a sudden it's as if it didn't happen, but it is happening.
Didn't happen.
And this is the same with climate change. It's like, there's mm-hmm. this big thing and it's going to get us all in the apocalypse, but you know right. what? Keep doing what you're doing and go to Mexico. And it's like, what
make
are
a plastic
we?
And do, yeah. Just
right.
do whatever.
And just buy more Amazon. It's okay, but the world is burning, but keep buying, but keep, and it's like, what, how are we not, how can we be clear when we are,
I know,
the messaging from every angle is literally, of course we're numb, of course mm-hmm. we're in this place where we're crawling mm-hmm. in confusion. Mm-hmm. I just want to like take a moment and have compassion for all of us and be like, yeah,
absolutely.
It is so confusing.
It is so hard. It is not easy. This is not going to be easy work. This is dark work. Like, people, they come on and say, oh, the NAP ministry, that sounds so cute. And the NAP bishop, and this, oh, yellow. And like, this is some, you know what I'm saying? Like, pillows uh-huh. and blankets and cloud. Like, this is some real deep, dark work. Okay. This is some deep, dark realizations. This is some underground dystopian nightmare ideas around like what is really happening to us. And what I will say to that is, what I do is I lean on the past. I lean on my ancestors. Like, I talk about that in the book so much. I lean on the ideas of what they were doing and how they were able to be a in the system, but not of it, how they were able to still find joy and pleasure and have family and still come up with inventive plans to escape. I uplift Harriet Tubman and Underground Railroad. I uplift people jumping off slave ships and hiding out in caves, the Maroons of North America. I really uplift the ways in which resistance and refusal was like, there was no I might do it. It's like it was freedom or death. It was life or death for them to be able to make in these choices, and how within those choices they continue to float on this spaceship of uncertainty that they created. I think about my grandmother Aura leaving the deep part of the South because she had saw a lynching, and she was like, I don't, you know, like millions of other people in the Great Migration, they left and they just floated on these little spaceships of hope that they created with like a $20 in their pocket and a little note on how to get there. And they just really trusted spirit and the guidance of spirit. I think about Harriet Tubman not ever getting caught when she was on Underground Railroad, how she was actually stopping to pray at certain points to be like, where does she go? How she was reading the sky, how she was a master astronomer and could read animals and could read the earth, and how she was a nature woman and was able to use the earth and use the stars and listen to bird sounds and use the plants to be able to find this medicine and this tapping in. So when I say tapping in, that's what I'm thinking about. Like, she's literally on the run, running for her life with a bounty on her head, and she's stopping to pray and to get plants and to listen to the owl sounds. She know where to go and to stop and get a word from her ancestors and pausing, and prayer is a form of rest. And so she was waking up from prophetic dreams saying, my people are free, and just like prophesizing about their freedom. And so this is what I hold to, and this is why history and the archives are so important for this work and are so important for any future that we're trying to like build out. If we don't go back and listen and tap in and get those inventive ideas and expand on them, we won't make it. And so they have been my guides. They have been what have kept me going when I'm looking around and being like, oh, wow, things are on fire. But I talk about that in the book. I say, you know, let's torch it then, you know, like let's get off. If grind culture is what's killing us, then let's get together with some matches and let's torch the grind, you know, let's torch it so that we all can burn it down and begin to build something new. And so I'm not hopeless, because I'm a historian and because I'm a researcher and because I am connected deeply to my ancestors. What they were doing is brilliance, is inventive, and they were doing it with so much less. They were doing it without a smartphone. They were doing it without ID. They were, you know, they didn't even have ID. They didn't have even autonomy over their own bodies. They were quote unquote owned by someone else. They were not letting that idea hold them. They were remixing and being subversive and understanding that there are ways to resist, that there are ways to connect, and they did it no matter what. And so a lot of people don't know the history. You know, this culture does a really great job of erasing history, of keeping us from it, of taking it away. We think about all of the drama and people trying to keep history out of schools. And so I uplift in the book that this work all started with these fragmented parts of my history, and that you can go back into your history and that you can read the history of where we're from, and you can look to the past and look to the present to be able to build this new future. But I love this quote Nikki Giovanni said. She said it, she was at a speech, I believe at the University of Chicago years and years ago. I read this speech and she said, if my ancestors can believe, then I know I can. And I just sit with that. I'm like, if my ancestors can believe, then who am I not to believe in this moment that I can be free and that my body belongs to me and that liberation is possible? And so it's going to be a deep, deep individual work, but also collective work. But it's going to be work that people are going to have to take on and grab hold to and slowly begin to do the unraveling and healing work. This work is an invitation to heal.
There's a quote from an interview you did with Patrice Coolers, and it's Q&A, Nat Ministries, Trissa Hersey talks rest and racial justice for PRISM. Mm-hmm. And you say, I want to go slow with it and be very realistic that this is going to be a slow, deep unlearning. I'm very easy with people and tell them, be easy on yourselves. I know you feel guilty. I know you feel shame. I know you grinded last night because you have to get some extra money at work to live in a capitalist system, in a white supremacist system. I understand there are the limits and the boundaries. So that's why I ask people to begin to tap into their imagination. Rest is imagination work. It's about reclaiming and reimagining what you can be. It's about tapping into your senses in a way that this world hasn't allowed you to. You're gonna have to be flexible. You're going to have to be subversive. And I am thinking about how when we hear your work and these quotes and we're reading your book, and you know, some of us are going to be drawn to it and we're going to feel and sense the truth in this. And of course, there's this, probably for some of us, this urgent desire to figure it out and to be good at it and to be healed and to be able to move on. I don't know to what. I'm not sure what we're moving on to, but I'm sure that there's that thing in our mind that thinks, okay, we can do this. And so I just want to talk about how we cannot, nor should we, try to be perfect in our resistance. And I realize also that perfection and purity are romanticized in a culture that values output over the reality of people's lives. So what might we learn by embracing the mess and imperfection that comes with leaving behind the ways we have been brainwashed into mindless productivity and on and on?
Yeah, such a great question. Oh my, I love it. I mean, it really is like where our healing lies. It's where all of the energy for any type of justice work is going to lie. It's going to lie in the acceptance, in the messy, in the experimentation. I open up the book saying, you know, this work is the output. This is the imagination and the dreams of an exhausted and curious Black woman. So I'm extremely curious. I'm extremely open to the idea of experimentation, to invention, to like being able to use this beautiful body and brain and wholeness that I have to be able to say, what if? You know, it kind of asks this question, what do you believe? So I'm always pushing myself and thinking about the idea of what if, you know, what could this be? And I think that really, Ayana, when I think about it, it's because I'm an artist. You know, I think my being an artist and having an art practice since I was probably, you know, 15, 16 years old, being a poet, a theater maker, installation artist, a writer, a person who really loves experimentation, performance art, you know, ritual maker. And also, I think it also goes back to the idea of how I was raised. You know, I was raised in the Black church, in a Pentecostal Black church, in a place where I watched people literally chant and pray themselves free. I watched people, you know, catch the Holy Ghost and fall out and wake up from it and look totally different and be healed from drug addiction and be healed from all these things. Like, I understood and saw what embodiment could do. Like, I'm not afraid of embodiment. I'm not afraid of leaping. I'm not afraid of experimentation. That comes to me easy, to watch my ancestors and parents take something from nothing and make it something and be able to like heal themselves and stay alive. And my grandmother being a refugee from Jim Crow terrorism, and my dad, you know, working all these jobs and still being able to be an organizer and activist and seeing how community care and embodiment literally can save us. And so I know for a lot of people, they may not come from that origin story. Maybe they're not an artist, but for everyone comes to this world with an imagination. Like, our imagination as Bell Hooks has said so brilliantly, is one of the greatest tools of those who are oppressed. It is, she said, the greatest tool of it, our imagination. Octavia Butler speaks in these ways as well, as talking about the idea of what imagination and how we can hope and how we can be and how we can be a part of the solution, because there's millions and millions of infinite ideas that are out there waiting for us. And so I love that question, and I love the idea of people understanding that this is about experimentation. And when I say that to people, they look at me kind of like, what? And I talk about the idea of imagination, how I see it being robbed from people younger and younger. Like when you think about young people and children, when I used to be a teacher working with young people, I mean, I'm talking about 11 to 18, you know, and they 11, 12 year olds who are still, who their imagination has been robbed. Like their whole idea of imagining something different has been robbed by the poverty of their communities, by the prison industrial complex, by capitalism, by violence in their communities. Like they literally have been robbed of this idea of imagination. And so I think about how resting is imagination work, that it is this idea of daydreaming and imagining a new way, and how we won't be able to get there from an exhausted mind. So if we want to have imagination, if we want to tap into the infinite ideas that our imagination is waiting to give us, it won't come from an exhausted body and mind. Like it just isn't possible from a biological standard, from a spiritual place. You know, we are killing ourselves when it comes to our exhaustion and our sleep deprivation and our exploitation from work or abuse. And so I say to people that daydreaming, having space to just be, staring at a tree, imagining. And so I teach people how to daydream. Like I have these collective daydreaming activations that we host, and we're going to be having them at the Rest Temple here in Atlanta pretty regularly, where we bring people together and teach them how to reclaim their imagination and teach them how to collectively daydream, how to daydream with each other, how to let your mind wander, how to experiment. And so this work is really about repair. It's trying to get people to tap into the things that are already within them that have been stolen from us by these systems. Our dream space has been stolen. Our time has been stolen. Our ability to just be has been stolen. Our idea of leisure has been stolen from us. The idea of having a hobby has been stolen from us. Everything has been monetized by capitalism. Everything goes back to making a dollar. And so this work wants for people to tap into this idea of imagination. So there's a whole section in the book that's called Imagine, and it just speaks about deeply about the ideas of what imagination is and my inspirations for imagination and how this work resides in the spirit of that. And so I really want people to begin to slowly see that their exhaustion will not give them nothing but more exhaustion.
It's really important to differentiate imagination from a place of the programmed capitalist burnout mind versus imagination from a rested place grounded in spiritual practice and liberation. Yes. I think they're very different. And I think back to conversations I've had with Adrienne Marie Brown about the imagination battle and how we're living in somebody else's effed up imagination.
Yes, we are.
And I really see that with so much of, I'll just say, the environmental movement or the climate movement, for instance. I feel like folks are moving so fast and imagining, I guess they think it's progress, in this way that is frightening, because they're selling it to us as a escape out of the depths of despair, or they're selling it to us as the solutions. And I see it more and more and more, especially over the past 10 years, the ramp up of the technological imagination that will save us,
right,
which is very different than a grounded practice mm-hmm. with spirit to rest and imagine a way out of mm-hmm. the mind that keeps creating and selling and honestly extracting. And I think that's really left out of the conversation when we're thinking yep. about these saviored imagined solutions. It's the extraction is really out of control. Like I just, you know, briefly want to talk about the imagined technotopian world of green energy, for instance. In Alaska, they are literally trying to open up the entire land base to mineral extraction to, quote, save us from climate change and fossil fuels, which if we were rested and we were slower and we could be like, wait a minute, actually, let's take a moment and think, do mm-hmm. we want to burn more fossil fuels to extract more minerals to then create new infrastructure and new systems to keep what going? Like, what are we doing? What are we trying to continue? And does that have anything to do with our liberation? Or is this just a new form of these labor wars? Like, it doesn't quite make sense. But if we're too numb and too distracted and exhausted, we are literally we are in the midst of being duped in a whole other way. And that frightens me. Like, and it kind of enrages me, which is another topic you brought up in your book, is rage. So maybe we could riff off that a little bit. But like that rage that I'm feeling even saying this, of like, what are we doing? We need to slow down and we need to shift our value system, because we're about to go into a whole other level of dystopian. I mean, we're in it. We're not about to, like, we're right here. And the last thing I'll say about that, the insanity of us grinding so hard to extract more, to buy more, just to throw it away almost immediately. Yeah, I'm like, what are we doing, people?
It's maddening. It's so maddening. Yes. It's so maddening that I sometimes, most of the time, can't make sense of it or make my way out of it. Like, I don't even know where to begin sometimes. And I just feel like it literally, it's a spiritual battle. Like, I have to take it like back, like as my father taught me as a Black preacher, Black liberation theologian, that we have to understand that everything is happening is spiritual, you know, that we are spiritual beings. And I think we forget that we're existing in this, on this earth, in this planet, in this dimension. And we're forgetting that we are actually existing as spiritual beings, and that all of this goes back to spirit. I think about the civil rights movement, and how if you spoke with any of them, Martin Luther King and any of his colleagues, they would always call what they were doing spiritual work. They always knew that, you know, human rights work and civil rights work and justice work is spiritual work. And I don't hear people talking about that enough. They talk about it from this shallow layer of thinking policy can change things, but that's the white, you know, supremacy of it all, because indigenous people know that this is spirit. You know, people who are in tune with the earth understand that this is all a spiritual battle. And so a lot of times I call technology and social media demonic. I just name it as demonic, the same way I name white supremacy as a demonic force. And I don't think a lot of people want to get into it and go deep into that. And I think that's what my theology and my theologian mind and interest are coming in, where I understand that we are battling against, you know, spirit. There's a spiritual war happening, that we're going to have to tap into that. And that's why resting being a spiritual practice opens up itself for us to lay ourselves, our weary bodies down into this spiritual place, for us to gain some type of care and soothing and some calm and a balm, you know, for us to go in and receive these spiritual powers that are waiting for us, that resting is waiting for us to lay our bodies down and be and just stop and make sense. And when you talked about us just keep going and going and we're being duped, it's like, Yeah, we're being duped because we won't stop enough to be like, wait a minute, no one's stopping anyone. It's like all these people acting out of exhaustion, out of violence, out of the lens and ideology of white supremacy and capitalism, and no one's stopping and being like, hey, wait a minute, what's up with that? And so I think people feel numb to speaking. I think people have no bandwidth. You know, I think that we are so exhausted on every level, physically, mentally, spiritually, that we are so hemmed up. I was just reading an article that 70% of Americans right now are looking for second and third jobs to be able to try to deal with the recession. And I'm like, what? Like, in this exhausted state that we're in with the pandemic, that many people are working, looking for even more work, even more labor, even more time on the clock to just be able to eat. And so when I think about the rage I feel about what the systems are doing to us, what they have done to us in our bodies, that they continue to push us to the, we don't have the energy to let alone be working one job right now, not people to be able to live in their homes, afford rent, eat, feed their families. They literally have to work three jobs, look for more work, always be going. And so every people's entire life is being surrounded by labor and doing, and so that's not being human. That's not a human being. That's not meant. Humans aren't meant to function like that. You know, we aren't meant to be working like a machine. And so all I can say is that I have deep hope for what the divine can offer. I have deep hope for spirit, and I have deep understanding that what we think we see and what we think is happening, there's always something behind it. There's always something working behind the scenes, and that resting can help to amplify the spirit for us. You know, it can help to bring that spirit louder and closer so that we're able to grab on and hold on. And so I always tell people, we won't make it without rest. We won't make it without connecting to this as a spiritual practice, as a political practice, as a social justice ideal, as a public health practice. I mean, it lands in so many different ways that it's so important that we begin to expand our minds and that we begin to just surrender to rest, you know, surrender to the idea that we aren't going to be able to do everything. And so I talk about that in my book, like, how I got to this was literally, I was dying. I literally used rest to save my life. I'm not being, you know, I'm literally was feeling like I was dying, you know? And so rest became something that allowed me to save my life. And I focused solely on it. And I just had to have a faith walk. I had to leap without a net and to say, I don't know what it's going to be, you know, but it can't be this. Similar to my grandmother who left the deep part of Mississippi to go to Chicago during the Great Migration, running from racial terror there. And she didn't know what it would be when she landed in Chicago. She just knew it ain't gonna be this. And so this idea of hoping for the future, of leaping, of imagining, of trying to make space to just be, to allow yourself to tap in, to slow down. And so I am really hopeful about the idea of what could happen for us when we are able to slow down. And we're gonna have to do it. We're gonna have to snatch it. No one is gonna do it for us. That's another thing we're gonna have to process and really sit with, that everything in collaboration in this culture is for us not to rest. And so this is an outlier movement. It's a movement of experimentation and investigation. It's a slow movement. It's a political refusal.
In a sense, the rage you're speaking about is respectful. It's yes. Really acknowledging what people are going through and the oppression and the hate that the system must have for people. Because yes. What's really outrageous is that there is so much money in the world. We see the folks on the mega yachts, which are literally mean nothing to them. Like these mega yachts and all this luxury is so meaningless. And yet there's other people who can't even feed their families without going into massive exhaustion. And it doesn't, again, it's like, who are we working for? There's enough money to go around. There's enough money to pay people to rest, honestly.
Yeah, that's there's abundance, that, like this scarcity model that we're living under. There's so much abundance. There's enough. Mm-hmm. The earth can provide enough food and water and care and and lovers and you know, money and ideas for all of us. But because we have been trained in this scarcity model, that because this whole entire culture has been built on a model of scarcity, that makes people so deeply brainwashed to the fact that there is an abundance available to us. And so it's so correct that when you think about the money, when I think about the idea that there's trillions of dollars, like what does even trillions of dollars look like? You know, when I think about the trillions and billionaires, it's like, really? Like, this is what we're doing? Like, what is that necessary? Why do you need to have more? Why do you need another dollar? Why couldn't some of that money go, like you said, pay people to rest, give reparations, you know, use the money so that climate change isn't happening at such a rapid rate, that we could be doing so much. But that's when I start to bring up the demonic nature of it all, and the spiritual aspects that we are fighting against and that we are within. And, Martin Luther King Jr. would call it a spiritual deficiency. He always told the culture, when he talked about what was happening with racial terror in the culture, that he said, it's happening because there's a spiritual deficiency upon us, that people are suffering deeply from a spiritual deficiency. He always wrote about this in his sermons. If people read his sermons, he was always giving sermons and using the word of spiritual deficiency. And I always said with that word, like, whoo, like that's so deep, the idea of a deficiency of spirit. And I feel like that he was saying that back in like the 50s. And now we're here now, and we're deeper into, we have more things that are driving us deeper. The technology, like I really believe that technology and social media is really driving us deeper and deeper into deep, deep spiritual deficiency, deep, deep disconnection, deep exhaustion. Really, it's a disease. It's an addiction and obsession that if I talk about in my book, we don't begin to examine it deeply, I'm not sure what's going to happen. You know, I'm not sure collectively what will happen. And so I'm always offering to people to do these detoxes offline, to just put your phone down, to go back to the ancient and vintage ways of connecting with people, to like turn off that antenna and turn on your own internal spiritual antenna to be able to listen and hear. And so when I go on these 30-day Sabbaths and I'm like off the phones, off technology, off emails, I literally feel like a new person. I feel like I'm like buzzing on another level of connection. So much comes to me. My sleep is so good. I wake up, I was handwriting 18 pages of like notes around like ideas and poetry and journaling. And it feels like an antenna is turned on and I'm able to hear what really the earth wants to tell me, what spirit wants to offer, what my body wants to say. And so until we can begin to turn off some of the noise and deaden the noise and have more silence and have more spaces to rest, and we do that intentionally and with care, and we do that collectively, and we do that meticulously, that we actually make space for, that we just say no. You're going to have to say no, and it's going to might not be easy. You're going to have to heal from the idea of bound, not having healthy boundaries, of people pleasing. You're going to have to like really begin to hold yourself in such a graceful and merciful way to understand that you will have to say no, because the systems will continue to say yes. They'll continue to push. They'll continue to put things on your calendar. They'll continue to say, can you work 10 more hours? Can you get 4 more jobs? You know, I remember it was at a time when my dad was working 3 jobs, you know, and I'm just like, how is a person able to manage 3 jobs? You know, how is that? Literally all you do is get up, work, and go to bed. There's no living in between. And so we aren't living. We're like the walking dead. And I want to bring us back to life and bring us back to humanness. And that is through rest. I believe rest will simply make us more human.
I just really want people to understand this offering in long form is deep and it's something that you can spend time with and get off the screen with and be with and pray with and meditate with and pause with and go back to. And you can share it with your community. And so I really just want to bring it full circle to the beginning of our conversation that we now have a place where we can be slower with you. And I'm really grateful for that, because I think that, you know, social media is definitely in many ways evil, but there's times where you can go on social media and see work from folks like you and be inspired. And it's like that little spark, you know, it's a spark. And then you take that spark and you get off the screen and you go and you study and you sit and you rest with. And so this is an opportunity for folks to do that. And I'm really grateful for you for taking all the time and the attention that it must have been for you to create a book and also share it with us. So Trisha, thank you.
Labor of love. Yeah, it's been a labor of love. Thank you so much. Yeah, I want this to feel like a lullaby. Read it to yourselves and to each other. So one of the reviewers called it a lullaby of liberation. They said it felt like a lullaby of liberation. So this is a invitation to just to slow it down. And I ask all book groups who use it to make space during your book meetings for resting, for naps even, for meditation, to don't rush through this book, to come back to it, to underline in it, to highlight, you know, to offer up passages that feel like a meditative moment. And so I'm so grateful for the long form and for this opportunity for people to have it in their hands.
Thank you for listening to For the Wild podcast. The music you heard today was by Real J. Wallace and Fabian Almasan Trio. For the Wild is created by Ayana Young, Erica Ekram, Francesca Glasswell, and Julia Jackson. As a reminder, an extended, edited version of this episode is available to our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/forthewild.
KBOO Portland.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends in your legacy